You're listening to Rockwired.com, online radio that rocks. From Rockwired Sound in Albuquerque, New Mexico, of all places, this is Rockwired Radio Profiles with your host Brian Lush, exclusively at Rockwired.com. Today, Rockwired Profiles, Birdsong at Morning, and their retrospective, Annals of My Glass House. Stick around for more. Rockwired Radio Profiles is a production of Rockwired Media LLC, a limited liability company. Please stand by. Welcome to another edition of Rockwired Radio Profiles, exclusively at Rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and the music is out there. Today, we're turning the volume way down low for the acoustic band Birdsong at Morning. They have just released a retrospective entitled Annals of My Glass House. Rockwired had a chance to speak with Alan Williams of Birdsong at Morning, and you'll hear all of that in just a few minutes. From the retrospective Annals of My Glass House, here is Birdsong at Morning with Those Beautiful Words.
It's been a long time since I welcomed you. Buried a treasure map under my skin. Worshipped a face that was lit from within. My love. Walking the streets holding on to your hand. With the words pouring out like the hourglass sands. I'm riding a wave that I don't understand. What I'm feeling. 'Cause language will falter and fall from our grasp. And the vacuum of space is a silence so vast. It's the distance that tells us that something has passed between us. Of all of the wonderful lessons I've learned, when the song has been sung, it cannot be unheard. And though I've forgotten those beautiful words, I still.
Beautiful words, I still remember.
worshipped a face that was lit from within.
From the retrospective annals of My Glass House, that was Birdsong at Morning with those beautiful words. Visit the band at their official website, www.birdsongatmorning.com. Rockwired had a chance to speak with Alan Williams of Birdsong at Morning, and here's how the interview went.
Well, Annals of My Glass House is quite the collection. It seems like a collection of collection of EPs. And now that it's all packaged that way for everybody to sort of take in, how do you feel about the end result?
Oh, excellent. Well, certainly pleased with the final result. I think that we had a vision for it that it's always nice when you come fairly close to what you were envisioning when you set out. Certainly not exact, and there's certainly material on the record that wasn't in existence when we started it, but a lot of it sort of was in some sort of formative stage, so I think for me it was mostly just relief to know that we finally kind of did see it through, because it took about a little over 2 years to complete it, and as I say, a chunk of it was already, you know, written, and we recorded all the drum parts in like a day and a half, and then scattered those tracks throughout the record. So it's just sort of an ongoing process of finishing records.
And talk about how you went through the past darkly with the songs and decided what was going to go on it and what you decided to leave off of it, you know.
Well, yeah, right. So there's two paths, one of which was sort of expediency, which songs are the most complete and or that we've already maybe been performing, so we have a real handle on how we want to finish the recordings. And that's what I think the first EP was, more a sense of just, okay, well, these are the oldest songs that we've been playing and we're fairly solid on it, and then how do we want to build from it. And one of the things that I think was sort of bothering me at the time was trying to figure out, I had some songs that maybe felt like I wasn't sure if they fit in with what we did, and I had a hard time thinking about how we'd sequence tracks. I know in the age of downloading, nobody thinks about albums and sequences, but I still do.
I'm old enough too, I get what you mean.
Okay. So we're thinking about that, and I thought, well, what if this song doesn't really fit with this batch? What are we going to do? And then I realized, well, the nice thing is if we split it all up into these EPs, then we can pull together material that fits within itself. And then if you sort of set up that template, then it's okay if each EP sort of has a little bit of a different tone. Now, I mean, we make the music we make. It's never going to be radically different from one song to the next. And, you know, there's certainly a similarity of approach that runs all the way through it, I think. But if nothing else, it gave me the permission to go ahead and entertain having a couple of songs that might have stretched us a little bit. So then there's that. The other version of that would be that you can pull together songs that have a similar theme or a mood. And I always liked an album, maybe like a side of an album, that you could sort of, that sustained the same kind of feel all the way through. And I thought maybe we could do that, an EP where if it's the middle of the night and you're a little depressed and that's just what you want to hear, all of these songs will fit that mood. And there won't be this sort of upbeat little poppy number in the middle of it that this doesn't seem to fit. The other cool thing was that then when you start thinking about it in terms of moods or themes, you could say, wow, okay, so these four songs share this common, I don't know, like the second album has all these references to astronomical terms. That was inadvertent, but I stepped back and realized, well, I've got all these songs where I'm talking about the cosmos. Why don't we put those on one? And then you say, well, that's four songs, but we kind of need five or six, so maybe you'll actually write a new song knowing what the theme's going to be. And it's really nice to have like a set type of thing you're trying to write for. And then the other template we use, we always do a cover for each one of the EPs. And so then for the second record, it was a matter of trying to think, is there a cool song out there that talks about planets or stars or something in that realm that speaks to me as a artist or as a person, and that we could also interpret in the sort of the band way of doing things. And that's how we did this, the Rolling Stones' Moonlight Mile. It's a song that's always had some deep meaning for me. And suddenly it's like, hey, I wonder if we could do that. And then I could steal the string arrangement. It'd be really fun. So that's the nice thing was being able to discover things that would fill the holes that we had sort of set up in the process.
I see. And talk about how music began for you as an individual. How did that start?
Ah, right. Okay, well, the honest answer to that is my parents took me to see The Sound of Music, the film. I think whatever it came out in, I think, 64 or 5, and 65, and there must have been a revival in, like, 67. So parents took me to see that and came home, and so I was, like, 3 years old. And I couldn't reach the piano. I couldn't see it, but I could reach my hand over and hit the keys. And I evidently tapped out, you know, Do, Re, Mi, and learned to play that whole little song with my hand over my head. The parents thought they had some child prodigy on their hands and promptly got me a piano teacher. And it turned out that really all I wanted to do was play Do, Re, Mi. I wasn't really interested in learning the piano. So that kind of failed, but I think it kind of, it bothered them that maybe I should be a musician. So when I was six, they bought a bunch of piano books and got me another teacher, and I did piano lessons the whole time I was growing up from then on. And it was like when you do piano lessons, you're doing classical music repertoire, and you're not even really aware that classical music is a music. It's just something that shows up in these books that you have to learn. But it was still fun to do that, but it wasn't the same as making music like I was hearing on records. So at around the same time, a babysitter happened to leave behind, I think she left it behind, I don't think I stole it, but I'm not so sure, a 45, the Beatles, I Am the Walrus, Back with Hello, Goodbye. And that set me on this sort of Beatlemania path. Of course, this is all happening right after the breakup, so I'm that generation that discovers the Beatles after the fact, but I was deeply immersed in that. And finally, one day, I realized I could actually play Beatles songs on the piano, and that the piano wasn't just about playing etudes. And but then from there on, you know, you want to be in a rock and roll band and make all this great pop music. But Jerry Lee Lewis and Elton John aside, piano players are kind of at a disadvantage in the rock and roll scene, so I never quite was able to pull that off. But on the other hand, you know, when there's a good rock band going on and they need a keyboard player, that's where the nerds and the geeks kind of get their foot in the door, and that's how I got mine in the door. I was in a band in high school that was, like, we were a semi-professional cover band, so we worked a lot, which was, you know, and we were all, most of us were all underage, but we were in bars anyway, it didn't seem to matter. And then you had to play everything. You had to play whatever was in the top 40. So in 1980 or 81, that meant sort of that meant doing Blondie songs. It meant doing, we had a female lead singer, so we did Blondie and Heart, and she could do all the Steve Perry vocals, so we could do Journey. We could do Van Halen stuff, The Stones, Prince, you know, Kool and the Gang. You had to do all this different stuff. And, that was a great education for me. Just to try to master playing all those different styles. And yeah, then I ended up at a conservatory where I struck again by that same problem. Okay, classical music, it seems so limited. Fortunately, I was in this very strange program called Third Stream, which was about blending jazz and classical music. And really, when we were there, it was kind of more about blending anything, trying to sort of tear down these big genre distinctions. And that was a great experience. It was a little intimidating because a lot of the players in that building were phenomenally gifted, and I realized I was never going to be that kind of piano player. So luckily I started playing synthesizer, and that was a less common instrument at the time, and got by with that. But the main thing at the conservatory was it just sort of opened my ears to creating what I would think of as popular music, but it really is free to draw from anything. And I think in Birdsong, that's maybe not ultra obvious, but it's fairly present in the music. There's string sections, okay, but hopefully it's not cheesy orchestrations. I'm hoping that the orchestrations are sort of integral to the piece, and why not have a string player be part of a rock band, or why not bring in Arabic, you know, kanun players or other percussionists? Not because you're trying to dabble in world music, but just because that's the language that you're speaking at this point. And what I realize is that people that listen to our music, or people that I just meet in any other context, we all tend to have really broad musical tastes. And it comes as no surprise that, you know, a metalhead will also be into Bulgarian wedding music. Fast, it's in odd meters, it makes sense, you know. And I found, I teach, so I found a lot of my students have far much more surprisingly broad musical taste than maybe sometimes we assume. And I think it's becoming more and more common that really anything goes.
And talk about the genesis of Birdsong at Morning. How did this project begin?
That's right, because Birdsong was kind of born out of a series of just very loose gatherings that Darlene and I were putting on for a number of our friends who had been professional musicians for the most part, but for any number of reasons to kind of put the instruments away. A lot of us had had relatively successful careers. Darlene was a record producer. Greg, our bass player, was in a band. They were signed to Columbia. I was in a band that was signed to Island Records. And we all had the really bad major label experiences and kind of grew tired of losing that particular game. It seemed like the game was, you know, the odds were stacked against you. And I mean, Greg at one point just said he just got tired of lugging that big bass cabinet around. And you realize that you have no retirement, you have no insurance, you have nothing, and it's time to get a real job. So we'd all done that. And that's wonderful because it does give you some sort of stability in life. But if you've really committed your life to making music, it's kind of, it's hard to truly cut that out. So we were trying to find a way in which we could bring music back into our lives. And we thought it would be just exactly that. Maybe once or twice a month you'd get together and just play for the fun of it. The problem came is that in playing, especially between Darlene and Greg and I, we sort of found a sound, and I started writing songs again after like a 10 or 12 year period, and these songs were very different. I was singing very differently than I was when I was 20, and it was hard to not give it the attention to treat it as a really serious going concern. And all along the process, we've always had to step back and say, well, wait a minute, are we still having fun? Because that has to be the real reason we're doing this. At this stage, we have really no illusions about becoming rock stars and having big video hits and all that kind of thing. It was more, you know, make sure that we're having fun. And we are. At the same time, we really like what we're doing, and we think people might also like hearing it. And so then you have to take the making of the music a little more seriously, and you do have to put some effort into making it available to folks, and before you know it, you're back in that nasty music business world that you were trying to run away from. So the new challenge is how to be in both worlds in a way that feels comfortable, that you're not wasting your time, but you're also not losing your sense of what's important at the same time. So I think we've got our work cut out for us, but that's the line we're trying to toe at the moment.
Visit the band at www.birdsongatmorning.com. From their retrospective Annals of My Glass House, here is Birdsong at Morning once again with their rendition of the Blondie classic, Dreaming.
Tell you were no debutante. You ask me what's my pleasure, a movie or a measure. I had a cup of tea and told you of my dreaming. see. What real to real is living verity. Where people stop and stare at me, we just walk on by. We just keep on dreaming. Dream, dream, walking a 2 mile. Dream, dream, meet me at the turnstile. Never met her, I'll never forget her. Dream, dream, hearing for a little while. Dream, dream, live it up tonight and fade away. Oh, radiate. Light, sitting by and watch the river flow. Sitting by and watch the traffic go. Imagine something of my very own, something I could have at home. I'd build the road to go, just to have some dreaming. Dreaming is free.
You're listening to Rockwired Radio Profiles with your host Brian Lush, exclusively at rockwired.com. Musical aptitude since 2005. Rockwired.com is pleased to present Nexix, Rockwired's Artist of the Month. In a musical environment that is all too easy to write off as plastic, along comes a band like Nexix to prove just how exciting pop music can be with the release of their debut EP, Queen. The music knows no boundaries, and this Barbados-based band can go from soul, hip-hop, R&B, and rock all within a moment's notice. With songs like Gossip Girl, On the Floor, and the riveting ballad Take a Minute, Nexix is poised to take on the industry on their own sweet terms. This is Nexix, Rockwired.com's Artist of the Month. Visit Nexix at both Facebook and MySpace. This ad is brought to you by Rockwired.com, online radio that rocks. Put a little Rockwired on ya. Rockwired.com has just relaunched its merchandise page filled with t-shirts, long-sleeved shirts, hoodies, mugs, and caps. Trust me, nothing looks better on the human body than clothing that shows your support of online radio that rocks. All shirts and jackets are available in all sizes and brought to you by Cafe Press. Visit our store at rockwired.com/merchandise.html. All major credit cards are accepted. Rockwired.com, online radio that rocks. You're listening to Rockwired Radio Profiles with your host Brian Lush, exclusively at rockwired.com. Musical aptitude since 2005. Welcome back to Rockwired Radio Profiles, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host Brian Lush, and today we're giving it up for the acoustic band Birdsong at Morning and their retrospective Annals of My Glass House. Rockwired spoke with the band's founder, Alan Williams, about the formation of the band and their approach to songwriting. Here's how the rest of the interview went.
And talk about the other members of the band, and what do you think? What it is you think each of them brings to the table that makes it work?
That's a really good question. Darlene is my sweetheart, so we are together, and she, as I say, had been a record producer and engineer for many, many years in the late 70s, 80s, and into the 90s. She had worked at all sorts of different music. She, you know, kind of in here in the Boston area, she was in a well-known low-budget studio that she worked with all the big Boston punk bands, all the big, you know, Boston jazz guys, and ended up falling into the folk singer-songwriter crowd. Simultaneously, while she was working at a studio called Mission Control, she was working with, you know, New Kids on the Block. So by day, she's doing a New Kids session. By night, she's trying to get some folk singer in there to work with the whole Fabulous gear. And she made a name for herself by putting out really good-sounding records in a genre that had normally been fairly low-budget, quick recording, not a lot of attention paid to how things sounded. And it meant that this singer-songwriter stuff was, I don't know, maybe a little more commercially viable, but also illustrated that there was less of a difference between pop and folk as might have been apparent. So she became the go-to person in Boston for all these folkies for a while, and really honed her studio craft that way. That's how she and I met, was working in studio stuff. But she, it turns out, had also been a guitar player and a singer before she embarked on the studio thing. And of all the people that were coming to these Sunday gatherings, she had had the guitar in the closet the longest. She had put it away in like 76 or something. So for her, it's been a matter of rediscovering the joy of getting to play. And I fished her old Martin out of the closet and got it fixed up. And then she found this semi-hollow body Gretsch that a friend of ours was coming to the sessions to play, and just, it was love at first touch, and that's what she's doing. She's playing that guitar on most of our records, and we try to leave some space for her to play. It's not a flashy kind of rock embellished playing, but I think the sound of that Gretsch and her approach to playing is really integral to the sound. And because she was a record producer, she really listens with that kind of ear. She's not going to just stomp all over things. Everything is very much kind of arranged, and everything has its place. And we are fairly precise in that way. Greg, our bass player, he and I go back to high school days. We were at the conservatory together. So we have a really shared musical vocabulary and history together, where it's that kind of mind-reading thing. I know what he's going to play. He knows when to play something. It's just understood. We really don't have to discuss very much. And what I love about Greg is that as a bass player from the 70s through the 80s, I mean, he's done all the jazz, popping, slick, fusion-esque thing that every bass player in 1985 had to do, and has sort of renounced a lot of that flash, and he's become much more focused on simplicity, on tone. He's not looking to play all the time. He's not looking to play in a flashy sort of way. He's really happy to play that open low E, as long as he plays it with exactly the right finesse. So, that just fits our musical thing, too. There's a real careful attention to detail, and nobody's in it to show off. But at the same time, you have to kind of trust that everyone's going to be able to play it with exactly the nuance that's required, and that's what both Greg and Darlene bring to the music. And it's if they hadn't been playing and singing the way they were, I would never have started writing songs again. So they're responsible for a big chunk of it, that's for sure.
And describe the songwriting process for you. How does that work for you?
Well, I'm playing guitar, and as a piano player who plays guitar, it's always a process of discovery. I found that when I was doing guitar in standard tunings, I tended to play the standard chords, thick and heavy, and hit the guitar too hard, and almost try to play the guitar as if it were a piano, and that's not usually a good idea. So, you know, I've been experimenting with alternate tunings, and the beauty of that is I don't really know what I'm doing. So you stumble upon things, you find things, and as the fingers start to find where things are on these guitars, it tends to suggest a melody. So for me, most of the time, this guitar part suggests a melody that then suggests harmony, and it quickly comes. Usually songs come really quickly. And then there's the problem of the words. And words rarely come quickly. I have learned that when they come, write them down, use them, get them now. Instead, I tend to have lots of unfinished songs waiting for words. And in many ways, the Birdsong EP set, four EPs, is reflective of that because, as I say, we recorded a chunk of the drum tracks in a day and a half, but most of the stuff that the drummer was playing to was in a very unfinished state. And by the time we got down to the fourth EP, I was really up against it, rewriting lyrics the day before the last mix and all that kind of silliness. I don't know why it's hard for me I think a little bit has to do with standards. I don't like writing easy out. It's easy to come up with a quick rhyme, but hard to justify its presence. And I think because Darlene was a producer, she's always looking at the lyrics carefully too. So I know that the band isn't going to be happy with the subpar lyrics. There's that kind of pressure as well.
And with that being said, I mean, I realize I'm gonna ask you to go back to four EPs here, but of the catalog, and what songs resonate for you the most personally, and why?
That's a really interesting question, and you know, I'm not sure that the songs that resonate for me are necessarily the best songs or the songs that people respond to. Sometimes resonating might have something more to do with the process. Maybe there was a problem I was grappling with, and then I found the solution, and having found a solution, it sort of opened some doors, and so you think, okay, well, that song probably isn't standing out to anybody else, but to me it's so important because it allowed me to write all these other songs. And the song that I think of in that respect is on the second record. It's called Light in the Window, and that's one where, again, the melody came out of the guitar part, came pretty quickly, and actually, the chunk of the lyric came really quickly, so I had something to work with, and I knew what the song was going to be about. It was about some sort of quality that's a little elusive and hard to describe, and so that was a task, a big chore, and then I also was trying to grapple with writing in this, you know, planetary imagery, and so I'm really happy with that song because the lyric maintains all of the cosmic metaphor, but it really does, I think, say what I wanted to say in the piece. And so that may be one of the first times where I felt like not only did I get my point across, but I got it across in the manner that I had intended. And as somebody who never felt like they were necessarily a strong lyric writer, that might have had something to do with why I was hesitant to put words to music. And I felt like with that one, it just bumped me up a notch and said, okay, maybe the words aren't going to necessarily be a problem. You can do this. So that song resonates for me. Those Beautiful Words, which is the first song on the first EP, is a little recap of Darlene and I and our relationship. One of the first songs that we played as a band, and certainly the first song where, as we recorded it, it became really clear that it was going to serve as a musical template for everything we were going to do from there on out. So that's an important one. Boy, what else? Okay, there's another one on the first record, Wishful Thinking. It's a ballad that also, I think, has a relatively strong lyric and does get its point across. It's a rather long one and takes a while to get there, so I'm not sure everyone has the patience to sit through it. But me, it's one that when I'm singing, I find it really easy to tap into the vibe that I get. It's there in the song. You just reach for it and it's right there. So that's nice.
What would you like a person to come away with after they've heard the band's music? What would you like them to feel, think about, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I guess as much as I've been talking about lyric, I feel like music without lyric is really important. I think it can convey a whole lot, and we aren't as comfortable articulating what those things are. When you talk about a lyric, a text, it's very easy to pick apart a line or say, wow, that was so powerful, it really meant something to me, it reminded me of my grandmother, or whatever it is. But when you hear sound, it's a little more abstract. And what I'm hoping is that when people listen to the music, that the combination of the sound of the music and the arrangements of it, coupled with the words, allows people to bring a sense of interpretation beyond text, that they can let that music create some sense of meaning or emotion that is abstract, and that you don't have to articulate it specifically. Just say, I don't know why, but that song really moves me. That would be the ultimate takeaway for me.
Visit the band at www.birdsongatmorning.com. From their retrospective Annals of My Glass House, here is Birdsong at Morning once more with Wishful Thinking.
Wishful thinking.
say I love you, is it just wishful thinking? Wishful thinking, am I in wishful thinking with you?
That's going to do it for this edition of Rockwired Radio Profiles. A special thanks goes out to Alan Williams of Birdsong at Morning and to Wendy Brinford Jones of Hello Wendy PR. For Rockwired, I'm Brian Lush. Remember, keep your eyes forward, never look back, and make it up as you go. Rockwired Radio Profiles is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC. Limited liability company and is available exclusively at rockwired.com. Online radio that rocks.
I'm passing out in our street clothes. Now the hard times are behind us, but let's not be afraid.